I do not want to be a kung fu thug forever. I too have ambitions.
Well, pop yourself a beer or a cold libation. Let me tell you how I wrote this little theme. I went and took a call from brother Jason, and he tells me that he has a little dream. He says he needs a backwards intro to begin his podcast, and I ask him, what you got? He said, I'll start off with some talking and some movie clips, some popcorn fighting, fantasy explorations, and some groundless exploitation. Kickstarts that I'm watching and some blind unboxings, full month horror movie marathon. Sometimes I let the dogs come on, contest and of course you know it's all about games. That's a slogan, let's just start with the name. It's the Nerds RPG Variety Podcast. The other Jason.
Welcome back to Nerds RPG Variety Cast. I'm your host, Jason. We're doing another in our series of Albert Pun's films for my year of pun. Albert Pun, of course, is a film director who died last year. And today we're going to talk about 1993's Brain Smasher, A Love Story. Once again, I have frequent co-host Daniel Norton of the Bandits Keep Media Empire with me. How are you doing today, Daniel?
I'm doing well.
Excellent. Excellent. So, Daniel, had you ever seen or heard of Brain Smasher, A Love Story before?
You know, I don't think so.
Now, so we need to get we need to address the elephant in the room here. This movie stars Andrew Dice Clay. Andrew Dice Clay is a very controversial figure, which is mainly because he was a stand-up comedian who adopted a persona. You know, he's a Jewish stand-up comedian, adopted this gruff Brooklyn, you know, persona, the Dice Man, who's racist and homophobe and sexist and all this stuff. But that's not who Andrew Dice Clay, a human, is. That was the stage act. That was a stage persona. And we see a lot of comedians will do this throughout the years, right? Like Rodney Dangerfield, the persona you see wasn't Rodney Dangerfield at home, right?
Right.
But sometimes
people get the respect.
Yeah. But Andrew Dice Clay is a controversial figure. I will say, if you don't like Andrew Dice Clay, his humor is very dialed down here. So if Adventures of Ford Fairlane is a really watered down version of his stage act, this is a really watered down version of him in Adventures of Ford Fairlane. So you might not like his humor, but a lot of the homophobe and all that stuff is not in this movie at all. So I don't think that's an issue with watching this movie, but I'm interested to get Daniel's take on that.
Yeah. You know, it's actually really interesting because I was curious about this movie. Cause I thought, you know, the thing that makes Andrew Dice Clay is that, right. Whether you like it or you think, you know, you can whatever. And I'm like, how is he going to be if you don't have that? And I didn't think that it would be that way in this movie because it also has Terry Hatcher and it is pretty mainstream. So I was very curious. And yeah, I mean, he really wasn't, if at all what you would imagine. I think that, you know, of course, there's always some jokes in movies, especially this movie's now, you know, 30 years old. I mean, there's going to be some stuff that's not exactly going to line up. But I think overall it was very tame compared to what you would imagine. I mean, when he got kicked off the MTV Music Awards, I think was worse than this.
Right. And mind you, he's come back from it. Now, you know, if you look at him like in the more recent A Star Is Born from 2018, you know,
he's in there. That.
Yeah. The one with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, he's in there. He plays Lorenzo in there. He's come back and he's in other things as a regular person, right? Not just as the Dust Man. I think he got vilified because of that stage thing for, you know, whether that was appropriate or not, you know, isn't what we're going to talk about here in this podcast, but I would urge people not to let him being in this be the only reason you don't see it. Because when you mentioned mainstream, this is probably the most mainstream of all of Pun's movies, to be honest. For the average viewer, the average American viewer, this is probably the most accessible thing Albert Pun has ever made. And it is legitimately a well-made movie with good actors, good writing. It's not super strong. It's still kind of a B movie. It's weak in a few places, but it's a very polished movie. You can't complain like it was poorly filmed or that the music was bad or the sound was bad or even the acting was bad, really. yeah, I think there are parts of the story's a little bit weak, but for the most part, this is a, I mean, it's a movie that stands with other movies, 1983 movies that showed in the theater. This can stand up right with them, I think.
I agree. I actually think, right, like I said, I was pleasantly surprised. I kind of went into it thinking, because when you said Andrew Dice Clay, I was like, oh boy. And he said Terry Hatcher, and I was like, I'm like, what could this be? And I watched the trailer, and I was like, oh man, this looks really zany. And actually, it's kind of a tame-ish. Like, if you didn't know who he was nobody, you didn't have any background on him, I don't think you would think that he's the person that, you know, again, not to dwell on the whole time, but you just because people will probably think that. Everybody's pretty good in this. I think there are, like you say, some weird story elements, but I think overall it's actually a really fun movie. And it's, and like, you could have this movie on, I think, for the most part, with almost any age group. I don't know what's rated. Is it rated R?
It might be.
I don't remember too well. There is a lot of violence in it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. If it's rated R, it's probably because of violence. Because now this does not.
Yeah, there was like a massacre in the nightclub that had a lot of violence in it.
Right. So this, as far as our scale goes, there are no boobs in this movie.
No. Nope.
It has a badass. Andrew Dice Clay is a badass in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
His character is. And as far as body count, we actually get a pretty high body count because the monks are killing a bunch of people. But
that's PG-13.
Yeah, PG-13. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's really not. It's pretty tame by today's standards. By like a Quentin Tarantino standard, this is super tame.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It's not graphic. So when we talk about violence, there's a lot of fights, but it's not graphic violence.
Right. There's a lot of like, I'm going to call it kung fu, even though it's really not kung fu. Although actually, maybe it is kung fu.
What's Chinese?
Because they're Chinese. Yeah. And then, so that's that running joke, which I actually think is really funny because, like, exactly, like people there, you know, you see an Asian person who's like doing martial arts, where everybody's like, they're ninja, and they're like, we're not ninjas. And that's like a running joke through the whole thing. And it, I think it played well every single time they did it. I actually thought that was a really good running joke. And yeah, I think he played a good character. And I think there was a bit of an arc, right? Like, everybody had a little bit of a change. I think hers was a little forced, but you know. I didn't quite understand the boyfriend. Like, that felt a little jammed in at the beginning. So we could see that she was in a breakup, but like, we really didn't see him much. And I don't know.
Right. And force in there the smart model where everybody's, you know, a model that reads a book.
Right. Well, okay. I wanted to talk about that because they do that at the beginning. But then later, there's like a scene where they kind of imply that she's not smart. And I'm just like, but they played up this whole time that she was smart. Like, why is she suddenly not smart?
She was smart. Her character would play up that she's dumb every now and then. Are you thinking of?
I'm trying to think of the scene where they said it. I think it was she was comparing it to her sister. That's probably why. And she was like, "Well, my sister's really smart and beautiful." Because they're like, "Oh, well, you know, you're beautiful and not smart." But I'm thinking, well, earlier in the movie, she was like being, "Oh, I read and everything," which, you know, again, is the way that you tell a audience in a PG-13 movie that the model is intelligent because they can read. Because
that was a
model that couldn't read. But
that was a dialogue between her and him on top of, again, like all these folks, these full spoilers, go watch the movie. It's on YouTube. You might be able to find it somewhere else. This is another movie that was never released on DVD in America. There are some foreign DVDs, but it's worth watching. Check it out on YouTube. So when they're on top of the trolley, running away, they're laying there and she's trying to hire Andrew Dice Clay's character. She's trying to hire Ed, the brain smasher. Right. And she says, you're talking about her sister, and he said, so you got the beauty and she got the brains. And she said, no, my sister's beautiful too. And he says, so she got the beauty and the brains. What did you get? So it's more of like a throwaway joke, I think. Although they did play up when she met his parent, they did play up that she could never remember his last name. They played that through the whole movie. We'll get to the parents. I love his parents. I actually really like this movie.
Me too. I actually, this is because I remember when you sent me the list, I'm like, this is the one I want to watch because I thought it would be really interesting. And I was pleasantly surprised. This is one I would watch again. So I'll give you that right up front. I think this was actually pretty funny. There was a lot of comedy. There was a lot of that kind of like PG-13 martial arts kind of fighting, which was pretty good. The plot was made sense. I mean, to a certain extent. I mean, it was definitely, you know, like all plots in many movies. It's like, okay, like because they're basically, well, because they're spoilers, right? Basically, she gets a package. That's this flower that from her sister, who then she's like, bring this to the United States. So she basically smuggles it into the United States for her sister. And this flower has like, well, theoretically has some magical powers, you know, and this is why these monks are after it, because the sister took it. So basically the movie is them trying to get the flower back. That's basically most of the movie. And that part's a little bit weird, because like, how did she get in the country? Like, whatever. I mean, that you gotta overlook stuff like that, right? Like, if she could just ship it easily in the country, why didn't she ship it to herself? I mean, I don't quite.
Well, I think what happened actually, because her boyfriend, the boyfriend she breaks up with, gives it to her at the beginning of the movie. He gives her the package from her sister. So I think he probably has a private jet, I think, and he flew it over in his private jet. His sister gave it to
her. Oh, is that the vibe that you got? Okay.
Yeah, because they mention his sister, she mentions her sister was in Paris. And so I think the idea is that he probably flew it over in his private jet. They never say that, but that I think is kind of implied.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Now that her sister, we've mentioned now, Terry Hatcher's sister in this, is played by Deborah Van Valkenburgh. I'm going to say her name wrong. Valkenburgh. And now she is an actress that you have. Now, she was in The Warriors. We mentioned The Warriors in previous podcasts. The Warriors are definitely an influence on other movies by Albert Pun. She was in The Warriors, and then she was in Streets of Fire, which Albert Pun later made a sequel to, well, unofficial sequel to Streets of Fire with Michael Parr and her. She's the main character's sister in Streets of Fire, if anybody remembers that. So that's another podcast. That's another movie I actually really like. So her sister's played by Deborah Van Valkenburgh. Now, most of these folks in here this has a great cast in here. So we have, and I don't know if you can pronounce Japanese names better than I can. The lead villain is Yuji Okamoto. I know I said that wrong. He's in a bunch of different things. People are going to know him maybe best from the Karate Kid franchise as Chosen. So, and he's reprised that role. He's the opponent in Japan. And he, when they go to Japan in the movies, and then he reprises that role in Cobra Kai in the TV show.
Oh, is he in Cobra Kai? I gave up after the first season, or stopped watching.
Yeah.
I should say give up.
Yeah, he shows up like the third season. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, because you're right. That I remember seeing. I was like, oh, that's where he's. I mean, because he's one of those faces that as soon as I saw him, I'm like, I've seen this guy in stuff. Like, he's definitely been in stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there are also the other place we see a lot of actors we've already seen are in the police station with the detectives. Byron James, of course, everybody knows him from Blade Runner and a bunch of stuff. Tim Thomerson, who's amazing. Yeah. I don't know about you, but I'm a huge Tim Thomerson fan. Of course, I know him best from like Transfers movies, things like that. But people recognize.
Okay, yeah.
Yep. The other two detectives are lesser known, but they've done a lot of stuff as well. The other actor I'm going to bring up in this movie is just a quick cameo. But when she's escaping through the club, and the big lady kind of intimidates the thugs that are chasing her and chase her away. That lady she unfortunately just passed last year. That's Dee Boer. I guess I'm saying her last name right. Boohr. She was a roller derby, and she was a professional wrestler. She wrestled with GLOW, the Glorious Ladies of Wrestling, as Matilda the Hun. She also was out, used the name Queen Kong. So I want to point her out because she's made a couple movies. She was in Spaceballs as well, and a couple other things, but she's really known as a wrestler and things like that. But her little cameo in there for the people that know her, I know is a neat thing. And she's,
that was really fun. That was a good part of the,
like I say, as far as the talking about like the filming aspects of it, we already said the music's good. The cinematography is good. They use Dutch angles here and there, which is interesting. I don't think there, and because this is hot, I don't know what the budget on this is. I can't find
that. I was going to ask you that because sometimes you say that. And I'm like, this one actually seemed like it had a decent budget because although they weren't flying all over the place, it was mostly shot like in wherever they shot it.
Right. But you didn't have those real dark scenes like you did in the.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
But it was well shot, very well shot. Yeah.
Right. This is 1993. Okay.
Right.
You, in a previous podcast, you joined me to talk about Omega Doom. That was 1996. That movie was made 3 years after this. And when you think about that movie compared to this movie, it's night and day.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy that, how much better this is than that. in every aspect. Well,
this movie is just tighter because I think it's tighter because it's simpler. Like right away, you get exactly what's going on. You've got your characters. You've got a sister that's you know trying to do something for you know Terry Hatcher's character is trying to do something for her sister who seems to probably get her in trouble. You get that right away that this sister does things like this, and then the sister, of course, is doing stuff. She's a little self-centered, but of course doesn't want her sister to get hurt. But they have pretty clean personalities. You got the monks that just want the flower. Like they're just like chasing them. And then you have Andrew Scott Clay, who gets involved at the beginning for the money, basically. And then in the end, you know, because it becomes a love story.
Right. The monks are interesting. So arguably, again, this is the 90s. And some of the humor probably wouldn't be, you would want to rewrite some of this stuff if you're going to try to do this today. But there are some genuinely funny stuff with these monks where, you know, where like they meet his parents and, you know, he tells them all to smile at one point or where they're, you know, doing different things, little comedic bits either in the background or like where he's afraid to break through a door because he thought they were going to sneak up or the way they're jumping around. The monks are really interesting in this movie, the way they use them. And I think they use them well, all considered.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's really well put in. It's very PG-13. Like it definitely has that like a little bit of comedy without being over the top, constantly running through it, even with the violence. You know, it's not like you're not thinking like, oh, you know, at no point do you actually think these monks are going to kill, you know, the characters really. Maybe in the end they might win or whatever, but it's not like it's a ruthless rated R movie where people are getting chopped down, you know. It definitely is more chill than that, at least generally the vibe of it anyways. I mean, they do kill a bunch of people in the dance club.
Well, they do, and you don't realize that at first, I don't think. I don't think you realize how deadly they are until they're at the police station and the one sergeant is telling Andrew Dice Clay's character how they killed his buddy, the other bouncer that was out front. They broke his neck. And then when you kind of pay attention, you're seeing, yeah, they're actually killing these people. I mean, they wipe out a whole police station, right?
Oh, yeah, no, they're definitely tough and deadly, but because the way they play it, it doesn't feel so gruesome, if that makes sense. Like it's kind of like it's the tone of the movie, I guess is what I mean. Mm. Like they don't make light of it, but they're not like, you know, it's not like in your face, I guess. Yeah,
exactly. And which is fine. I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I like nice, super violent movies too, but I don't think that would be appropriate in the tone for this movie.
No, 100%. I think that's what I was saying earlier. That's why I looked up. It's PG-13. It's the kind of movie you could play for most ages. You know, I think that obviously 13 and above.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a whole lot here. They're on the run with this flower. The sister has a flower. They have to get through the night to meet the sister at the church and basically they're chased the whole night. So it's like a Terminator movie or any other movie where you have a unstoppable force chasing the heroes of course, Andrew Dice Clay's character is the only and Samantha and Terry Hatcher's character are the only characters that can actually defeat these monks in combat. Cause when they're leaving his apartment, we're jumping around, folks, but if you've seen the movie, you'll know. But he shows her the 1-2 punch where you punch him in the balls and then do the uppercut. Well, she does that as they're leaving the apartment. While they're still in the apartment building, she does that on a monk and lays him right out.
He teaches her how to fight. You know, that little bit. Yeah, it's funny, right, because they're – I'm going to talk about this. Damn it. I had a thought about them chasing around all night. I'll think of it.
Yeah, I'll let you think of it. So nobody else successfully drops one of these guys. The only people that ever drop any of these monks in a fight are Andrew Dice Clay, Terry Hatcher, and her sister. Those three characters, the only ones that anybody else that comes up against these monks are just taken out right away. They don't have a chance at all. Yeah.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. So this is, I mean, again, it was fine and it played. It was totally entertaining, but you could definitely tell, though, because I know you want to talk about it, too, that some scenes were put in the movie very specifically just to add a comedic element. Like when he goes to his parents' house. Like there's really nothing that comes of that except for that scene.
Right.
Right. Because he goes there to get his car keys, but they don't even have use in the car, do they? I mean, it's like they end up getting chased off and they.
Yeah. They never. Like
they don't even use it.
Right. They get to the car, but they never actually drive in it. Right. Which I love. So his parents, I do really love that when we meet them with Ralph Macchio and Lou Sheridan, who plays parents. And of course, Lou Sheridan's another actress more so than his father, who you've seen her in tons of TV, very recognizable actress. And they're great because they want to meet this beautiful girl that he's going out with now and make sure she's not like taking. And then when she launches, well, where did you meet? And she goes in this crazy story about these monks that are chasing her. And his father pulls him aside and says, you know, you shouldn't take care of the mentally ill, and or you shouldn't take advantage of the mentally handicapped. And
it's definitely one of those things like that. You could remove that scene totally. It wouldn't change the plot of the movie, but it was put there for that comic relief, basically.
Right. And well, that, and then it's played up later too, because we get where, when the monks show up at their apartment, trying to find them, and they trick the parents into thinking, they need to give them location to help their son out. But the mother makes sure to get his phone number so she can make sure her son's okay. And then so later on in the movie, she keeps calling the cell phone of the main monk.
No, I'm saying it was great for the comedy, but like if you're thinking about like plot points, it wasn't. So I think this is that kind of movie, right, where they stick parts into it for that reason. And it's done really well. I think that's a good example of a movie that has that, where like there's a scene that's funny and interesting and cool, but you could take it out. It wouldn't ruin the movie, but if you want it there, cause it's kind of interesting and fun. It also established, again, you get to play that character, going back to characters, right? He's playing that, I'm from Brooklyn, that kind of character. So his parents were the classic New York, Brooklyn, although they weren't in Brooklyn, they were in the city, but parents. And they're like, oh, Sonny, that, like, it was the whole thing that you would expect from that, if you're going into that trope. So I think they was really well played and done to good, comedic,
yeah, belief, definitely. This was billed as they're in Portland. I've been to Portland once or twice, and it's been many years, a couple decades. So I can't say if this was really filmed in Portland or not. I don't remember if it looks like Portland or not, but it's, yeah, in theory,
it was raining.
Yeah. So maybe.
that makes it, actually, it's funny you say that, because they said that multiple times, but because of his like character, I keep thinking they're from Brooklyn, because he sounds like a guy from Brooklyn. And then his parents also sound like that. So it's like, like, what are they doing in Portland?
Nope. Yeah, because he doesn't seem like a character that moved across the country.
Right. Like, it seems like that's where he's from.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy, he grew up in this neighborhood. He's lived in the same neighborhood his whole life. He knows his neighborhood. It's that kind of character. Yeah.
Why Portland? Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know that there's a whole lot else to say about this movie, which almost makes sound bad, but it's not. It's a good movie, but it's just not a whole lot there. When I was saying I think their parts are a little bit weak, I think the third act of this movie, the second to third act, the first act is good. The main chase is pretty good. Then we get this bit where he's after the police station, after they get out of the police station and the monks take out the police station, Andrew Dice Clay is, oh, I'm overmatched, there's too much for me. But then right away, he's, right back there helping her. So I think that kind of, that didn't do anything. I could live without that.
Yeah.
Where he drops out, because he never really drops out. Let's be honest.
Right. And I think, and maybe this is a less successful version of it, but this is very similar to the parent thing, right? It's like, that's a scene that you want in this kind of movie, where he's just like, no. So he can come back and be redeemed. Right. So that's the whole thing. He has to come in and save the day, but he can't do that unless he leaves first.
So they like
insert it into the, he never really leaves. And in the end, is it the sister the spoilers, right?
Yeah. Spoilers.
It's a sister, right? They flop the flower, they swap it.
Yeah, that's a sister.
End, basically they beat the guys just by tricking them in the end. None of this really mattered, because like if he had just given them the fake flower in the first place, it would have just killed the monk, it would have been the end of it.
Which, because she's in the movie, she's called the Indiana Jones of botanists, right?
Right.
It is very appropriate, because when we look back to Raiders of the Lost Ark, Harrison Ford could have not been there at all, and the movie would have ended the same way.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, so, it's just funny, because that's exactly it. She swapped the flower, which, I mean, maybe she couldn't have done. Maybe that's why she wanted to meet at that church, because they had that bush right out front that had the flowers that looked similar. And of course, she knew that because she was a botanist. So it all ties together. And again, it's a weird thing they don't explain, but you can kind of figure it out because they gave you the information. So I think all in all, it was a really well-made movie. I mean, I think it was, it's funny. It's got funny parts. It's got some action. It's it's not R-rated or anything like that. So it's actually pretty chill, except for the violence. But even that, it's not really, they don't show it graphically. So I think it's pretty like family-friendly on that level, I guess. Depends on how old your family is, I guess.
No, I agree with that. Like I said, I think for the most part, this is probably his. So I hadn't seen this since the 90s, on VHS back in the day, renting it, when I was in the barracks in the army or something. But this is probably now rewatching these movies, going back through the movies, this is his most polished commercial thing without mm-hmm. without a doubt that I've rewatched since we started.
Was this direct to video or did it actually?
It was a direct to video. but
it, yeah, because I don't remember ever seeing it. So I probably just didn't, I probably wasn't renting movies in a place that had it, or I just didn't stick out to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, but I definitely recommend people check it out. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Daniel, is this a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
Oh, no. Yeah, thumbs up. I think this is really good. I like this one, actually. This is our third one. I guess depending on what order you put them in. And I think this is probably the one I'd be most likely to watch again.
Mm-hmm.
Although I did watch Mega Doom twice. And I still don't know what's going on. No. It's
right. Funny.
No, I think all of them are interesting for different reasons. And I think that's what's great about like a retrospective, which is kind of what you've been doing for the year, right? It's like you're looking at all the different stuff this artist made, this director, and it shows just different sides, maybe a more commercial project, maybe something that's more of an art project, something where they're pushing the boundaries or trying something, mm-hmm. when they're struggling with not having a budget or when they have a budget, and you can really see what people can make. And I think that's really good because I find that I'm going off on a monologue about arts, but I think sometimes you find people that just fall into a thing and they just make the same movie over and over again. And even if it's a good movie, it just becomes the same movie. And I think that what I've seen so far in the movies, because I've watched these, of course, and I've also watched some of the other ones that you've talked about, that there's a lot of variety here. And it's really an interesting like career to look back at and stuff. So I appreciate you doing this. So I'll add that.
No, I'm glad I've been doing it. I'm glad that's the case. So where he did kind of get samey and was really hitting the same vibe and looking at the same kind of themes were with the different cyborg films that he did, the films that involve cyborgs or androids, like Cyborg, right. Nemesis, and he made four Nemesis movies. We only covered the first one. Omega Doom falls in that. He made a number of movies, cyborgs and robots and things, and those kind of fall. They're kind of samey. But other than that, he made a variety of different movies and some of them are better than others, but there's, another one we'll be talking about. We haven't recorded it yet, or we may have recorded it by the time the listeners hear this, but Spencer over at Down the Keep, or darn it, Spencer from Keep on the Borderlands is going to be talking about Alien from LA with me because he's a big Terry Gilliam fan. And there's a big Terry Gilliam vibe to Alien from LA with Kathy Ireland. So,
although now I want Rob and him to get together and make down at the Keep or Down at the Keep.
yeah, that'd be great.
New podcast.
Yep. So yeah, we've got a bunch of stuff coming up. Daniel, is there anything you want to plug? Or
no, you can just check me out. Bandits Keep all over the place, YouTube and podcasting and such. Oh, and Monsters and Treasure. I always forget. I'm so bad at the I have two podcasts.
There we go.
Check out Monsters and Treasure, where you can call in and say how right I am and how wrong KR is. Make sure you do that. It's important.
That is important, folks. Do that. Are you guys going to eventually get a speak pipe or another way for folks to call in?
Probably. I guess so. Yeah.
Now that I put you on the spot.
I probably should for my podcast too.
Yeah.
I'm just too lazy. I haven't had much luck with SpeakPipe myself. Like usually when I call people in using it, it doesn't sound as good. So I'm always like I'd rather people just email me really, but I guess I could.
Well, no, as long as there's a way to do it, it's just because, Anchor, which is now Spotify for podcasters, has gotten so bad.
And yeah, so, it's such a pain in the butt, right? Yeah. It's funny. I got actually a call on the Spotify app, and I forgot to put it in my last episode almost. I was like ready to put the published episode, and I was like, oh, there's an actual call from that, because nobody uses it anymore because it's so difficult to use. Mm-hmm. So it's terrible because that's the main reason why. I mean, it's the reason why I got into doing the podcast, because I was calling Andy all the time.
Right.
And then he was like, you call so much, you should make your own podcast. So it's like, if it wasn't for that, then I would have never got into it. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's a shame. We got very spoiled when it worked right.
Yeah.
So, well, again, yes. Thank you for joining me. And folks, check out the movie. Great movie. I will be back later in the week. But until then, be excellent to each other.
phone. Well, maybe it's your auntie or a joke about your spouse, but the operator's screaming it's coming from inside the house. What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? Well, the audience is pretty sure he took a pretty head, and the only question left is if I better shoot him dead. Bring on the gore, bring on the gore. I want some more, bring on the gore. Well, the butcher is a dustman and your moil is by the tipper, and I'm assuming that your partner back there in the wood chipper. Don't look away.